Welcome, everybody, to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Our very special guest today is actress, singer, dancer, Broadway star, producer, and daughter of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. Lucy Arnaz has had an extremely diversified career spanning over 50 years in show business. Can you believe that? She has starred on the New York stage in They're Playing Our Song, Theater World LA Drama Critics and Outer Critics Circle Awards was obtained, Lost in Yonkers, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Pippin, and Grace and Glory, in the London premiere of The Witches of Eastwick, in the Coconut Grove Playhouse premieres of Once Removed and a Picasso, in national tours of Pippin, Seesaw, Whose Life Is It Anyway, Social Security, and My One and Only with the Sarah Siddons Award, and in regional theater productions of Wonderful Town, Masterclass, Cabaret, The Guardsman, Annie Get Your Gun, I Do, Educating Rita, Vanities, and Mac and Mabel, to name just a few. Lucy has appeared on television, of course, in the Lucy Arnaz Show, Sons and Daughters, The Black Dahlia, The Mating Season, Who Gets the Friends, Washington Mistress, Death Scream, and, of course, six seasons of Here's Lucy on the big screen with, of course, Neil Diamond and Sir Laurence Olivier and the jazz singer, one of my favorites, which she had a Golden Globe nomination. Down to you, Second Thoughts, Billy Jack Goes to Washington, The Pack, Wild Seven, and has lent her voice to the animated fantasy about the New York Yankees, Henry and Me. Lucy has performed the opening number on the Academy Awards in 1981 and at the White House several times. She was an executive producer of the I Love Lucy 50th Anniversary Special, which she got an Emmy nomination, and Lucy and Desi, a home movie, an Emmy winner in 1993. She produced two CD-ROMs. She recorded her first album for Concord Jazz, Just in Time, and her newest CD, Latin Roots, which I love, I already gave it 5 stars, is a celebration of just what the title says. Lucy has been traveling the country and the world with her various concerts for over 20 years and has an upcoming tour here this summer. With her brother Desi, she manages Desi Lu 2, LLC. With her husband, actor Lawrence Luckinbill, she manages 5 grown children. Lucy invites you to visit her online, of course, at lucyarnaz.com. It is my great pleasure today to welcome Lucy Arnaz to the Ray Shasho Show. Lucy, thank you for being here today.
Oh, my gosh. Ray, I'm exhausted just listening to that.
Have I done
all that stuff?
Yes, you have, and more.
My gosh, I guess then you line it all up about 50 years worth of stuff. I started when I was about 12, so that's funny.
You look wonderful. Let me tell you, you're beautiful, and you're still young.
You
got lots of years in you, and, you know, you do look Cuban, by the way. I have to say that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes, I enjoy looking Cuban. It's a good look.
It is a good look. I'm half Cuban myself because my mom is Cubana. She was born and raised
in Havana.
Yeah. But first of all, we have something very much in common. I want to congratulate you on the wedding of your daughter, Catherine Luckinbill, and new son-in-law, Jeff Connor, who got married on June 18th at the Seattle Aquarium, which is really cool. Congratulations there.
Yes, thank you. It was beautiful. We planned it for over a year, and it's kind of surreal when it actually finally happens. And then it doesn't really hit you till 2 days later when you think, oh, my God, she's married.
I know.
Yeah.
It comes so fast, too, doesn't it? You do all this planning.
Yeah, well,
and all of a sudden it's here.
She's the baby. You know, we had five. I've had three of my own children. Larry has two from a previous marriage. We've raised five kids, and she's the youngest, and she's the only one that's gotten married, and she's 31 years old. So
yep.
It's kind of bizarre in a way. Like, the other boys must have been sitting there watching that going,
I better get on the stick here.
Yeah, she's like, wow, I forgot to get married.
It's funny. Anyway. She's the same.
Hello? Ray, I just lost you.
You lost me? Hello, Doug?
There, you're back. You're back.
Am I back? Okay.
You're back. You went away for a second.
I went away and I'm back.
World.
Okay, but yeah, my son, my daughter got married on June 23rd in St. Augustine, and she's also 31. Mm. And
oh,
when
my
I,
gosh.
Yeah, isn't that something? At the same time.
That is something. Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much. And I understand Kate brought the house down when she and her bridesmaid did a Supreme number.
Oh, my God. It was a Jackson 5 number.
Jackson 5 number.
Yeah. It was like her favorite thing to do at karaoke. She's a karaoke queen. She just loves to go to karaoke, and so does her husband, Jeff. And mm-hmm. So she surprised him by teaching all of the bridesmaids this dance, and they did, you know, this big Jackson 5 number for him, and it was hilarious.
That's,
I want
that's
you
awesome.
Back. The song was I Want You Back.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my daughter stole the show with William. They did the infamous dance scene from Pulp Fiction. It was great, too. They did a good job.
Well, when my husband got up and did the father-daughter dance, which is usually the most sentimental, you know, fabulous, you weep and cry.
Right.
He cut in on Jeff after they had done their very sentimental, fabulous dance, which was to Jimmy Durante singing Make Someone Happy.
Oh, yeah.
And they rehearsed for months to do this absolutely classic. It was like classic ballroom, beautiful, stunning dance they did together. And then my husband tapped his shoulder and broke in on him afterwards, and his dance with his daughter was Blues Traveler's Runaround.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Which was hilarious. It was exact opposite of what you expect the father-daughter dance to be, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I did Michelle. My daughter's name is Michelle, so we did Michelle by the Beatles.
Of course. That's perfect.
I read your mom wanted to name you originally, I guess, after her cousin. Is it Suzanne Ball? But your dad wanted you to have
No, it wasn't a cousin. It was an actress, Susan.
Susan.
An actress friend of hers who had been crippled in an accident. It was one of her dearest, closest friends. And her name was Susan, and so she was intending to name me after her.
And your dad actually...
It didn't work out that way.
Yeah. Did your dad actually sneak it in to put in Lucy?
He did, yeah. He waited until she nodded off, and then the nurse
That's so
came
funny.
In and said, what should I put on the birth certificate? And he said, Lucy, but spell it with an I-E so
with
nobody
I-E.
Will ever get confused. Which
that
is hilarious because
so
everybody gets confused.
Yeah, that's a great story. It really is. You know, you've got a beautiful singing voice. And
thank you.
I want to say it's obvious it came from your dad only because your mom was always picked on when she sang when she was on TV. Was that true? Was her voice not, you know, what it should have been?
Well, it was a hell of a lot. It's much funnier when you can, you know, make fun of somebody. When she was younger, she knew how to sing, but, you know, I think toward the end of her career, she smoked a lot.
Right.
And she spent a lot of time doing that Lucy Ricardo high-pitched voice, and it kind of destroyed her chords, you know?
Yeah.
She may have had the original material there, but she wasn't focused on singing, and so she didn't really take care of it. My dad had great chops, you know, for singing. And
yes, he did.
I may have inherited, it might be genetic, I don't know, or maybe it's just listening and having a, you know, predisposition to wanting to do that. And my mother didn't really, she wasn't really interested in singing as much as performing. And I always sort of went toward the musical before anything else. So, I don't know. It's osmosis, I suppose.
Well, Latin Roots, that's your latest release, correct? And
yes.
It received rave reviews. I love the album. I've given it 5 stars. And my
Thank
favorite...
Thank you so much, Ray.
You're very welcome. Especially your cover of El Cumbachero, which you did a marvelous job. Isn't that a fun song to sing?
Well, yeah, but that's my father's original arrangement, just in my key.
Really?
That's the original Desi Arnaz Orchestra arrangement, yeah. The one he traveled with and did on the show and everything.
Do you like the reference? I don't know if it was the New York Times. They said you're like a famous saloon singer. Do you like that?
I love that they said that. Yeah, no, I get that. I really love that comparison, because that means you're into the lyric and the storytelling, you know, and the greatest singers for me are the ones who knew how to put the story over, and the melodies are beautiful, and composers, you know, who knows how they come up with these incredible tunes, but
right. It's
always kind of the words that make you remember a song, you know, what they're saying to you. So I gravitate towards story songs a lot of the time. And yeah, so saloon singing is a compliment. That's, to me, Rosie Clooney was a saloon singer. Mm-hmm. Joe Martin was a saloon singer.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And those guys.
Well, you know, people need to go on YouTube, because you've got a lot of videos of you singing Latin Roots live, which I love. And
yeah, there's some clips from Latin Roots on my
website. Your site as well.
You can see a lot of it too. Yeah, thelucyarnez.com. We've put some of those up there. But it was a time when YouTube first came out, that people were very cautious about allowing anything to get out there, because there's musician fees and all these things. You're not allowed to do that. And I guess after a while, they just threw up their hands and went, "Oh, who cares? Now it's marketing."
Which is a
marketing.
Shame.
You're never gonna.
I know. It's a shame. I hope you guys get your cut in this, because, you know, I interview a lot of artists that they just put out a new album, and like a couple of weeks later, the whole album's on YouTube. So I hope you get your cut, or, you know,
that album was a few years ago already.
Right.
And I don't know that I'll make another one, because it's so expensive to make them.
Today
and
it is,
the
yeah.
business isn't like it used to be. I'm so glad to hear that you've actually played the record, because there's only a few stations I've found across the country that play that kind of music anymore. And unless you're promoted by a huge, big record company and you're doing arena-type shows,
right. It's
not like it used to be, where you can go into a Ray Shaw Show's radio station, say, "Hi, Ray, I'm Lucy Arnaz, and this is my new CD. You want to give it a shot?" You know,
right. That's
like back in the 50s. People don't do that anymore, I don't think.
No, it's a shame. It's a real shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a top 40 DJ back in the late 70s. So, you know, those were good days. You know, at least we had a...
It was different then, I think.
Yeah, it was different.
Yeah, now it's kind of a big paid platform area. And I sell more CDs in my concerts than I do from people trying to go to whatever's left of record stores or online recordings and things, you know. I'll make another CD at some point if I can figure out how to make money doing it. You know?
Yeah, I hope so.
I don't know how Ann Hampton Calloway makes a CD a minute. I don't know how she does it. I'm going to have to ask her, like, how do you afford to do this?
Do you have a home studio?
If you don't have too many musicians and you do it very small, it doesn't cost that much.
Right.
I did it big. I did 16 musicians the whole night. You know, I did a real CD.
You did the old-fashioned way, you know, the traditional way.
I kind of thought I had to, because it was Latin Roots, and a lot of that original material needed that sound, you know?
Yeah.
The original big band sound.
Right.
So, and I'm glad I did it. It's something I thought about doing for many, many years. Talked about it for about 10 years.
Right.
And then I was asked to put together a show at the 92nd Street Y Lyric and Lyricist series in New York for their 40th anniversary, and we talked about doing a tribute to Latin music, but just seen through the eyes of the Desi Arnaz Orchestra and those wonderful arrangements from that time. And I thought, well, if I'm going to produce this and be in it, I had better get my CD out there at the same time, because that's crazy. I should have it. And so I did. I, you know, simultaneously produced that show and created this CD, and they both came out on the same weekend, which was great.
Well, it's a.
And I'm still doing the show. I still do a show called Latin Roots now, which is like a big band version.
Yep.
Not the Babalu show that I did with all Dad's arrangements, but a lot of his arrangements, plus some of the stuff that it, you know, created in myself from listening to that music as a child. Now, these are the kind of songs that I do, and a lot of them have a Latin rhythm, but not all of them. So it's kind of Lucy's story, you know, because of Desi.
Exactly. But I do love the Babalu you do with your dad on the screen, and you're both, you know, hitting the conga drum.
That's
so cool.
That's a wonderful moment at the end of the show. It's really great.
That's right. It reminds me, too, of, you know, Natalie Cole did that with her dad. You know, she had her dad in the background.
Yeah, well, that was my version. Yeah.
Right. That was so cool. Well, I got to mention right off the bat your 2016 concert dates, because I definitely want to promote that and let everybody know where you're going to be. It looks like July 24th and 25th, you're going to be in Provincetown, Maine, as part of the Broadway series. you're going to be it's two performances there.
Provincetown, Massachusetts.
Massachusetts,
Mass.
Right. And that's at Paramount Theater, right?
Yes, at the Crown and Anchor Hotel Paramount Theater.
The 27th.
24th and 25th.
The 27th, you're going to be at Camden Opera House in Camden, Maine.
Uh-huh, Camden, Maine. That's the main date, right?
Right. July 29th, you're going to be at the Katharine Hepburn Cultural Arts Center in Old Saybrook, mm-hmm. Connecticut.
Connecticut.
Right.
Right.
July 30th, you're going to be in Fire Island Pines, New York at the Whitehall.
Right. Yep.
July 31st will be at John Drew Theater, Guild Hall in East Hampton, New York.
That's correct.
And you're doing a teaching song performance at Jacob's Pillow in Beckett?
Yeah, they asked me to do that last year, and I went up, and Jacob's Pillow, for anybody who doesn't know, has been there for 40 years, and it's an intensive 3-week program for dancers who want to be triple threats. And
right.
Mostly dance, but Chet Walker runs the program and teaches them like boot camp of performance, and you got to be able to sing, and you need to have expression, you know how to act too, and he brings somebody in through the 3-week series to teach a master class on song performance. And so last year he asked me, and this year they've asked me back. I loved it. It was great.
That's
I've
exciting.
Only done that a couple of other times, and I enjoy it. I'm doing it in Chicago as well with Lena Katrakis.
Right.
At Davenport's in July 7th and 8th. I teach a class there. Yeah. So that'll be fun.
That's exciting. Also, let's see, you'll be in Atlantic City August 20th at Resorts.
Correct. At the Resorts Casino, right?
Yeah.
At 8 o'clock that night.
Okay. And you'll be...
Yeah, that's my little mini summer tour. And in September, I'll be at Feinstein's.
Feinstein's in San Francisco.
At the Nikko.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
For 16th and 17th.
And huge, on November 19th, which is my mom's birthday, you'll be in Miramar.
I will. Miramar, Florida. We're doing a Latin Roots, a smaller version Latin Roots show with like 6 pieces in Miramar, Florida.
You must be a queen in Miami.
I love it down there. I've played a lot of venues in Miami, and it's always fun, you know. It's a combination of these wonderful retired people who just love
right.
the old-fashioned music and the
oh, yeah.
Great American Songbook, and then all the Latinos who love the Latin stuff. So
right.
I do very well down there. I like it down there.
I could see you booking it all year in Miami.
Yeah, well.
Talk about performing in The Jazz Singer. That was a great movie with Neil Diamond and Laurence Olivier. I mean, you know, when I posted that you were going to be on the show, a lot of people wanted me to ask you about that because they really love that movie.
I get a lot of compliments specifically about Jazz Singer. And it's interesting, too, because when the reviews for that movie came out, the poor guys, they crippled Neil and even Laurence Olivier. The reviews were incredibly
really?
Cruel, just awful. Awful. They somehow salvaged me. I didn't. They thought I was fine, but they
right.
hated Neil. They hated Laurence Olivier. They hated the script. Mm. And every person I meet practically tells me that's one of their favorite films. So
yep.
it's funny how sometimes the public has things they want and need and totally identify with, and the critics aren't anywhere near. They don't even have a clue, because we actually won. It won the award. It's called the CinemaScope Award.
Right.
As people leave the theater, they fill out this form, and it's really like a people's choice. It's what the people actually felt when they saw the movie. And it won that year. It beat Ordinary People, which won lots of Academy Awards and stuff. I mean, it's a people favorite, and it's huge on sales afterwards, you know, the video sales afterwards. And I was very happy to be in that movie. I had a great time.
The video was
a bit
tremendous.
Of a challenge.
Yeah.
Well, it was a challenge because when I was hired by their original director,
right.
Sidney Fury. And then by the time I got out to Los Angeles, I quit. They're playing our song on Broadway to go do it.
Mm.
And I went to Los Angeles, and the day I got there, I found out that they had fired Sidney Fury. And we were all just sitting there. We didn't know what was going to happen. And for 2 weeks, they paid me to just sit and wait until they finally hired Richard Fleischer, who was a fabulous director as
right.
well. I don't know why poor Sidney lost his job. And then, you know, having to work with Neil, who was charming and wonderful but had never acted before. So
mm-hmm.
he was scared to death every day. Or you look to your right and you're working with Laurence Olivier,
exactly.
arguably one of the finest actors on the planet. You
That's
know?
Right.
So it was an interesting combination. But I soaked up every single bit of it. I was on the set every day, whether I was in the movie or not. I just wanted to be there, you know, to hear the music and to watch Olivier work.
You were marvelous. It was a, you know, it was great.
Thank you.
I don't know why. I don't like critics. You know, I really never give anybody a bad review when I, you know, review music and things like that. And if I don't like the album, I just won't have them on my show. You know,
if you don't,
I don't
like
talk
it,
bad about them.
You don't have to say it. If you haven't got something nice to say, don't
exactly.
say anything. Isn't that what
exactly.
we were taught?
You are right. You're 100% right. I'm the same way. When you bumped into Neil the first time, did he have a beard and you didn't recognize him? Is that true? Neil Diamond? I heard something like that. Yeah,
because the first scene was at the recording studio, I think, and I think he... No,
he
that's not
full,
true.
He
didn't
have
a
full
beard then.
Huh.
No,
I
not
saw
in the recording
that somewhere.
Studio scene.
Yeah, I read that somewhere. I don't know.
I know. They make this stuff up.
I'm telling you, the internet.
No, that's not true.
That is not true.
The first scene we did, I was in New York. They were still shooting in New York. And it was the recording studio scene, and he didn't have a beard in that one, I don't think. But, you know, it was a long time ago. Who remembers?
I know. I'm friends with Janet Robbins, who's also on the show. Mm-hmm. She's the daughter of Marty Robbins, the famous mm-hmm. country singer. She says that her dad never brought his work home, and it was very important for him to keep it separated. And he never even saw the dad sing till later in life. I mean, was that true with your mom and dad? They never brought their work home? They were just mom and dad, pretty much?
Well, it's hard to bring that kind of work home. I mean, I know what you mean. Like, did they come home and talk about the show?
Right.
And stuff? Tell you the truth, by the time I was seven and a half or eight, they were divorced. And that's about the time
right.
you start remembering anybody coming home, you know.
Right.
I just remember that he wasn't home a lot and that they worked very, very late. My mother worked really late. I rarely had dinner with her because we were young. You got to eat by six or seven, and she wouldn't practically be home till seven or eight, you know.
Yeah.
And his work was everything. It was producing, directing, singing, acting.
Yeah.
And so... In the summertime, when we were younger, he would always be singing. I mean, he was always entertaining and singing and playing his guitar or playing drums with my brother and
mm-hmm.
something like that. So that part of the work I did get to see a lot of. And my mother would talk. I mean, in the later years, she was married to Gary Morton,
right.
who was producing the show with her.
Mm-hmm.
And they would talk a lot about casting and people who were on the show and directors and you got an inside backstory to what really goes on, you know, how hard they worked and how difficult it was, which was good because if I was ever going to go into the business, I never went in thinking, oh, this is going to be fabulous and fun and glamorous and,
mm-hmm.
you know, have a lot of money and be perfectly happy. I knew from day one how hard it was going to be and the long hours and the trials that you go through trying to produce a show. And that was not a secret to me. So I do it because I really like the work, you know.
Right.
Not for the whatever you're supposed to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
The fame and glory, it's never what you think it's going to be. You have to really love your job. You have to love doing it.
Well, like you said, it's hard work. Definitely hard work. You know, I don't know how your dad kept up with the producing part of it. And all the shows Desi Lu produced, it's incredible. That's why TV is no good anymore, because Desi Lu's gone. They produced all the greatest shows.
Well, he had some
it's
incredible,
true.
Yeah, he had great instincts. He really did.
Yeah.
He's very intuitive. I mean, to buy the rights to Star Trek from, you know, the Gene Roddenberry rights, he did that and started The Untouchables, Mission Impossible, Mannix, among, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, and then ran a studio that was the largest television production studio in the world. And, people don't realize. I mean, we talk about Desi, and they think of Babalu, and they think of, honey, I'm home, you know, which is ha-ha-ha funny. But
funny, yeah.
There's so much more to that man.
Well, he was a pioneer. He suggested filming in front of an audience, a live audience. They had 300 people.
Three-camera film. It suggested filming with three cameras in front of a
three
live
cameras,
audience.
Three cameras,
they had filmed shows in front of live audiences, but they were taped.
Right.
Or they had had three cameras, but it wasn't in front of a live audience. The first time it was ever done on film with three cameras in front of a live audience was the I Love Lucy show.
Right. And the show was filmed in its entirety from start to finish, usually, right? They rarely had
You have to stop to reload the camera, so they broke it down into scenes that you could do the entire scene.
Right.
It was a certain amount of time, and they wouldn't make the scenes longer than what the film would roll, you know? And then they would stop, go to the next scene, maybe quick costume change, quickly, and the cameras would reload, and boom, you'd start right up again. It was pretty much like a play all the way through, mm-hmm. And all the years I did Here's Lucy, or even the times that I was on the Lucy show, before the Here's Lucy show, we almost never stopped the show for, you know, oh, I screwed up a line, let's do it mm-hmm. again, like people do now.
Yep.
They just torture their audiences. I mean, those poor people sit there for 7-8 hours at a pop.
Yeah.
It's horrifying.
Yeah.
I don't know why they do that. I don't know why they can't be prepared with the amount of time they have and go in and do the shows. We did, and those were brilliant shows. I mean, my mother and Vivian and Bill and my dad did those shows in 4 days with rehearsal, mm-hmm. and you get up on your feet and you do the show in front of the audience. And
it's amazing.
Look how good they were, so...
Yeah. Plus, your dad did a lot of things. He would read the script once, I think, right? And that's it. That's all he needed. And then he went into the office and did all this, you know, production stuff.
Well,
and came back and,
I don't know that that's true. That again,
that's
is
not true either.
somebody, these people say these things and then they try to cut it down to a soundbite. You know,
yeah,
it's like the truth is he was able to, know his lines for the script and go to the office every day and go through contracts for all the other shows and deal with the people in the studio and all that. But in the beginning, he didn't own the studio. In the beginning, he just ran Desilu Productions,
mm-hmm.
which was
mm-hmm.
just... But he had to deal with all the scripts and all the writers and all the stuff,
yep.
hire the people, and learn his own lines and rehearse.
Yep.
And no, I don't think he was one of those people who looked at it once and he knew it by heart. That's
mm-hmm.
kind of fantasy land. But he was great at it. They never used cue cards. Neither did my mother until years later in the Lucy show.
Mm-hmm. That's still amazing, though. I don't know how you can memorize all that. I don't think I can. I'm not good at memorizing things like that. I need a script.
Well, when it makes sense, and those shows always made sense, it's easier, you know? And plus, it was only a half-hour show, and there were 4 or 5 other people, so it wasn't a monologue, you know. He just had his part, and he was good.
Yep.
He had memorized lyrics all his life, and I know it's not that hard. If you get your mind into the memory thing, you know, you can pick up lines a lot quicker. And my head is just full of thousands of lyrics. I don't know how. Other people say, how do you memorize all those lyrics? I said, I don't know. It comes into my head with the music, and it never goes out again.
Yeah. Do you read music as well?
Not very well. I mean, I know the notes, and I know on the page that's going to go up a half a step, and that's going to go down. But mostly it's by ear. Now, I'm not a good enough musician to be able to cold read. I love people who can.
Well, you know, most of the greatest legends of all time did not read music. You know, the Beatles,
well, that's
Jimi
encouraging.
Hendrix. Yeah, none of them read music. Everybody I talked to never read, you know, they just do it by, you know, what's in their heart and, you know, what's in their mind, and they just play.
Yeah. I like to see the sheet music. I tape, you know, have my musical director tape a song for me, but then I like to watch the sheet music to really make sure I learned it properly.
Right.
Because if it's, I do a lot of standards, and you've heard a lot of other people sing them.
Yep.
And sometimes you learn it wrong because they sang it that way, and it's better mm-hmm. to go back to the original and say, oh, wait a minute, this is what Julie Stein wrote, and that's great. I prefer to sing that, you know. Make your own choices of whether you want to do it this way or that way.
I always like it a little different. Anybody that does a cover, you know, when they sing it exactly.
Oh, otherwise it is karaoke.
Yeah, then it's karaoke, exactly.
It's totally karaoke, which is fine if that's the mood you're in to get up and sing your favorite song the way it was sung, and that's fun. That's really fun.
Exactly.
I had to tell my daughter years later, she put her own nightclub back together in New York at Don't Tell Mamas and got fantastic reviews.
Really?
She never even mentioned who her grandparents were or her mother and father.
That's awesome.
Fabulous. She did a great job. And after that, decided she didn't want to be in show business anymore and went out. And now she's a recruiter for Amazon, and it's hilarious. But when she was younger and she first started singing, she had a great voice, but she kept trying to sound like all these other singers, which is what we do when we're little. You know, we want to sound exactly like that song. But when she started to make noises like she wanted to be a singer for real, I said, Kate, the only thing you got to do is find out where Kate's voice is. Because we don't need another Christina Aguilar. We don't need another Britney Spears. We want to see who Kate Luckinbill is, you know?
Exactly.
And that's a hard thing to find, is what's your voice? You don't have to sound like that other person.
I think they're having that problem today, you know. And then they're getting a lot of singers today that really can't sing, and then they bring that auto-tune in.
It's horrific what they're doing with the freaking auto-tune.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand, you know, you're recording an album and you want to tweak a little something here or there. I didn't want to use that at all because I'm a theater person. I said,
That's
wait,
right.
I'll go back in. If it's pitchy here or there, I'll go back in and I'll do it again. And they go, oh no, you might never get that sound again. I said, people, I come from the theater. You go out every night and try to make it better. You learn from every performance you do, and it only gets better. It never gets worse. You can't get worse. You see the notes. You know where they are. And I just go back in and do it again. But people get lazy. You know, nah, we can just fix it right here. And I thought, ooh, I think, yeah, I hate that.
Yep.
And now they do it but with live performances.
I know. And that's something.
I mean, it's horrifying.
And, you know, a lot of their music
is over. How do people really know what they're buying, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Why do they like this music? Why don't you just create it from scratch and, you know, almost like a petri dish baby, you know?
No, nobody wants to see
fake everybody.
Yeah, nobody wants to see lip synced concerts. You know, a lot of them did that. Especially, you know, I remember going to a Britney Spears show, taking my kids, and I know she lip synced that whole show.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to point fingers at anybody specific, but I did see that tape online just recently of her where they pulled the actual track.
Right.
Which he was actually singing.
Right.
Before the auto-tune got to it.
Yep.
The live mic feed, and that's really scary. But here's the thing. To her credit, I have heard Britney sing for real years ago, and she did have a good voice.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have a terrible voice. But
yep.
Now the show has to be all about pyrotechnics and running all over the stage and putting your head between your feet and jumping up and down and jumping in a hole while you continue to sing like a brilliant, but that's just impossible.
Yeah.
You can't do that. So they're constant. If you notice, it wasn't so much that she was off pitch, it was that she was out of breath 100% of the time.
That's true.
You can't breathe when you're trying
to
do that and sing. It's one thing to be in a Broadway show, and you do have to learn how to sing and dance at the same time. But when you get into the big, 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 big dance numbers, the big, big tap numbers, people are not singing. They're dancing.
Right.
And then they take a couple of seconds to catch their breath and try to sing a little bit afterwards. But And you're trained to know how to do that, and you pace yourself. but these kids have not had any of that training, and they have these choreographers come in, give them all this terrible stuff to do, and pretend, I know it's okay, we'll just fix you in auto-tune. I mean, it's a whole other world.
I think you're right, though. A lot of these kids do have a good voice. Like, you know, Ariana Grande, I've heard her just sing, you know, without anything, without any auto-tune, without, you know, any overproduction or anything. And she's got a great voice. If they just let her sing naturally, you know, people would be happy with that. They could see how much talent she has.
It's the shows they put them in. It's what they have to make bigger and bigger, crazier and crazier. And I don't know.
A lot of the dancing.
What I fell in love with has kind of disappeared, but not completely. There's still people who do it, and you know, I love listening to
Me too.
Songs be sung by real people.
Real songs by real people.
What a concept.
What a concept, huh? What are your fondest memories of your mom and dad? I mean, did you have the Cuban experience at home at all? I know you were little, but did you guys?
Oh, sure, yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah, because my dad, especially after they were divorced, we spent weekends and summers with my father. And first of all, he was a fabulous cook, and we didn't have a lot of Cuban relatives because my father was an only child, and he had a bunch of sort of second and third cousins down in Miami, but His mother lived with him most of her life, and he loved to cook, you know, the arroz con pollo and you know, black beans and rice, you know,
frijoles, ropa vieja,
puerco asado, everything. Yeah, and I do the same thing. I cook it now too. I mean, that's what I've taken from all of that. I love to cook Cuban food.
Oh, you cook Cuban food?
Music.
What time do you want me over?
What?
You cook Cuban food? What time do you want me over?
Oh, I love it. I love cooking the whole thing, you know, puerco asado with a mojo criollo sauce and all that.
Mojo and everything.
I want to be near. I can't be near anybody for the next 3 or 4 days.
I know. I eat a lot of it.
Every single dish has 99 cloves of garlic in it, and onions and green peppers.
I know. Then you have your cafecito, you know, a couple cafecitos.
I only drink decaf coffee now, so there goes that.
Do you really?
It used to be tasty. Yeah. It doesn't sit with my stomach. I can't have caffeine, so I do decaf.
When you were a kid, did you get the café con leche? All the kids always got café con leche.
No, they didn't let us have that. It was too strong.
Too much, huh?
Yeah, I didn't get any of that. I still do my, you know, café con leche descafeinado. I do that.
Right. Now, do you speak Spanish fluently?
I think you just heard every word I know.
You're like me. I kind of fought my mom when I was a kid. You know, I said, nah, I don't know, you know, but now I picked up so much and I understand it more.
My dad was trying to work in a business that was run by people who spoke fluent English, and there were no Latinos at the head of those companies. And he was trying to prove, I'm sure, that he could fend for himself and speak English well enough to run a company, run a show, you know. And he was constantly training himself. He speaks, you know, he always had a little bit of an accent, but he spoke brilliant.
Right.
English. I mean, he knew words. He knew the definitions of every single word in the dictionary. He was self-taught, and he was very, very smart, like my cousin Pedro Wassmer, mm-hmm. who is related to me through my father's mother's side of the family. And, you know, they it's funny because Pedro has a more fluent vocabulary in English than I do.
Mm.
And something he's a great, like my dad, he took great pride in learning this language of the country that he had chosen to be his country. And but he was so busy doing what he did that by the time he came home, we didn't get a chance to talk in Spanish very often. And I think the only way kids learn Spanish at home is if both parents speak it, you know?
Exactly.
Since my mother didn't speak it, he wasn't about to converse with her in Spanish so that we could learn.
Yeah.
So I learned a few little words here and there, you know, not enough to and I took it in high school, but it got really hard, and then I switched to French, you know, so...
Yeah. You know, it's funny because when I learned it in high school, you know, it was an American teaching me Spanish. I said, this isn't the way I hear it in my house.
Right.
You know, I hear a lot of, oye, mi chico, you know.
And the Mexican Spanish has a different sound to it, too, than the Cuban Spanish by far. And, you know, in California, we get a lot of Mexican Spanish. In Florida, you get a lot
different.
Of Cuban Spanish. So
it's different, yeah.
But I know it's something I am still trying to this day to improve my vocabulary.
Right.
We have a Spanish teacher here in where I live that came to the house and was giving us lessons twice a week, but then I got the Pippin tour and I had to leave for a year.
Right.
So that schedule fell by the wayside, you know. It's hard
You know who are good teachers?
Basis.
Good Spanish teachers are Colombians because they don't talk too fast and you can understand everything. A Colombian teacher, I think they're the best. Because, you know, Cubans and Puerto Ricans talk too fast.
It's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And my father talks about learning English in in the book that he wrote called A Book by Desi Arnaz. That when he got off the ship to get over here, that everything sounded like just one big long sentence. There were you couldn't tell where one word stopped and the other one started. And that's what Spanish sounds like to me, you know, most of the time when... And I have a pretty good accent, so God forbid I actually say something in Spanish to somebody, and they think I speak it, so then they come back at me with, like, an entire paragraph of information. I go, oh, damn.
I know, me too.
I don't
Everything happens
Slow
right.
down.
Yeah.
We have a house in Baja, California, that my dad built a house down in Baja, and everybody down there speaks Spanish, including the gentleman who works for us and takes care of the house. And it just kills me that, you know, we have to do so many charades. It's hilarious the way we talk to one another.
I know.
And now
we
figure we've got computers, so I can go on to freetranslation.com, and type what I want and translate it and then show him the computer. And he goes, ah, see, and then he types his response and shows it to me.
That's funny. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Speaking of your dad's memoir, you know, I didn't know about it till recently, I was watching Johnny Carson rerun on Antenna TV, and your dad was on the show talking about a book, which is the title of the book. And I went in there at Amazon, and I read, it said, I want to thank Lucy and Desi for their friendship and for being who they are today in spite of all my mistakes and for being able to handle and overcome all the confusion and sorrow Lucy and I saddled them with. And, you know, I agree, you guys were awesome kids, really, to go through all that, you know? You really were.
Well,
so I can relate to that, what he's saying to you in the epilogue.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was very, I know, that moved me so much when I read that, when he said that. Yeah.
I'm going to buy the book, by the way, because it's so interesting. He's got his whole
history. Oh, it's such
history.
A great read.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, Ray, you won't be able to put it down. His stories, his humor, the way, and it should be absolute mandatory reading for anybody who needs to know about the film industry, about the television industry mm-hmm. itself and how it works and how that all started. It's really a great read.
And your dad was, his family was pretty wealthy, right? And they actually, I think the ancestors
right.
owned part of California one time.
Yes, yes, that street in Los Angeles,
right.
down near Cedars-Sinai, the Arnaz Drive.
Right, right.
Everybody thinks it's named after my father, like because it's Hollywood and it's celebrity. And I said, no, it's named after his great-great-grandfather. I
yep.
think great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather. Don Manuel Arnaz, who came here with his wife, Ventura.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why we have Ventura County now and Ventura Hills and all of that. They owned a lot of Los Angeles, that whole area. Yeah.
What
and
did
his grandfather, his great-grandfather rode up San Juan Hill with Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders.
The Rough Riders.
He was a doctor assigned to, yeah. to Teddy Roosevelt.
That's amazing. That's
yeah, they lost everything in that Batista
yep. Yep.
revolution. Yeah, his father was the mayor of Santiago de Cuba.
Yep.
And they had a house and a branch and a farm.
You know,
and a
you know we're probably semi-related somehow. My abuela was a gynecologist in Havana. You know, and that's hard to do to be a gynecologist
really?
Back then. You know, a woman gynecologist, doctor in Havana.
No, that's amazing. Wow.
And my grandfather was an engineer with Standard Oil Company in Cuba, and he was actually from Catalonia. He came over to Cuba. He,
uh-huh.
he was from Catalonia, so he spoke that language as well.
Right,
and my abuela was very rich. She had beach houses, penthouse apartments, and she came to this country with just the clothes on her back, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that was Fidel.
Starting over from scratch. Right.
In 1959.
Quite a story. It really is. You know,
it
enjoy
is a great
reading
story.
That, I think.
Yeah. Have you visited Cuba?
I have not been to Cuba, but it's supposed to be happening this year. I believe mm-hmm. One of the cruise lines, I can't say which one because it's still hush-hush with them,
right.
is doing their first American cruise line trip to Cuba, and they're doing a whole Desi Arnaz / I Love Lucy music cruise.
Oh, you're kidding me. Oh, my God,
Cuba,
that's wonderful. That is
where
wonderful.
I think I'll be doing my Latin Roots show on it and
oh,
a lot
wow.
of great Latin musicians and going down there. And it will stop in Santiago so that I'll actually get to see where he lived. And
yep.
We were supposed to go years ago, 2000 and I think it was 2001.
Mm-hmm.
It was when 9/11 happened.
Right.
And we all had visas. We were doing part of that documentary you mentioned, the 50th anniversary documentary. And we had visas to go to Cuba, and we were going back to my mother's hometown in Jamestown to film a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then 9/11 happened, and so everything, all the visas were canceled. And
right.
We couldn't go. And it's taken me this long to figure out a time and to be able to do it again. But that's on the agenda for 2017, which, just by bizarre coincidence, will be the 100th anniversary of my father's birth.
How about that?
He was born in 1917.
That's amazing.
Well, that's weird.
So
yeah.
this will be open to the public, right? We'll be able to get tickets and
yes,
get on
indeed.
The cruise.
If I, yeah,
count me in.
I'll publicize it. I'll publicize
good.
It as much as I can.
Well, count
sure
me in on this.
Sell. Okay. Yeah.
Definitely. To see you and to see you know tribute to your dad and because I was in Cuba when I was a baby. My brother was born in Cuba. And my abuela mm-hmm. was the one who delivered him in Cuba, you know. So there's a lot for mm-hmm. me to see, too, you know. My grandfather's born there, and yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah, you can
we'll
definitely
let you know.
Count me in there.
Okay. All right, great.
we were talking about the, you know, I Love Lucy and everything. The Lucy Desi Comedy Hour was, you know, I really love that series and all the guests it had. I mean, Milton Berle, you know, had an episode with Hides at the Ricardos, but my favorite was Lucy Goes to Sun Valley with Fernando Llamas. That was one of the funniest shows I've ever seen in my life. And that was an hour show,
yeah.
correct?
Yeah, yeah. No, people don't talk about that one a lot. It is. That was hilarious. That was a really good show. They all were, but, you know, that's I never have a favorite because it's silly. There are too many good things in each one of them. The writers were so brilliant, and it was just a magical chemistry with that cast. How do you top it? You never can.
It was the you know the chemistry between them all. You know, I interviewed Stanley and Barry Livingston, you know, from My Three Sons, Uh-huh. And I got some great stories about William Frawley, you know.
Yeah.
He was, what I understand, they said he was a great guy. Stan got a, he got a surfboard for his birthday. When he went back to his dressing room, he, William Frawley gave him a surfboard. But the funny thing was, I guess it was the Brown Derby when he got together with his cronies during the shooting. They would send the kids, you know, Stanley and Barry, to go get him because he was over, always over there drinking with his buddies. So they would send him over there to bring him back to the set, which I thought was very, very funny.
Oh, yeah. He never did that on I Love Lucy.
I heard that. I heard that.
No, he never did because my father gave him an ultimatum. You'll read it in the book.
Yeah.
He said, you know, I understand. They don't want me. They don't. Hey, buddy, he said, they don't want me to hire you because they say you're a drunk.
Yeah.
And Bill said, well, you know, sometimes this or sometimes that. And he goes, well, I tell you what, first time you come to the set drunk, I give you a pass. The second time, you know,
yeah,
give you a warning. Third time, you're out of there. And he never once came drunk.
Yeah, your dad, I could see, was tough. He could have been tough with, you know, because he's a business guy. I don't blame him.
Well,
you know,
yeah, and he liked to drink. He liked to drink, too. He said, I'll drink you under the table if you want to drink, but not while we're working, you know.
Yeah. You know, I didn't realize how old your mom was during I Love Lucy. Wasn't she in her, like, 40 or something like that?
Yes, and she was 40 years old when she started, and then she was 40 years old. That was the year she had me. So all the things she waited all her life to do, and the best things that ever happened to her, having her first child and a hugely successful career, happened when she was 40, which is amazing,
especially
back in those days. You know, 40 was like 70 in those days.
Yeah. But she looks so young at 40, you know. I'd never in a million years would have thought she was 40 years old there. It's amazing. Yeah. How, I got to ask, how's your brother doing?
He's doing okay. His wife passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Over a year ago of a brain tumor, and it was very difficult passage, and for months and months and years and years and years, you know, hard getting, trying to take care of her. And
right.
So, I mean, he's been better, but he's still kicking, and I appreciate you asking. He's doing okay.
For the audience, I just want to remind them, of course, he was a great drummer, and he played for Dino, Desi, and Billy, and recorded two top 40 hits, I'm a Fool and Not the Loving Kind, in 65, and between 98 and 2010, he was actually touring again with a new configuration of Dino, Desi, and Billy called, it was Ricky, Desi, and Billy.
Ricky, Desi, and Billy, right.
Yeah.
With Ricky Martin.
Ricky Martin, yeah.
Dino's brother.
Yep.
Dino's brother, yeah, and he still plays. He still plays percussion, plays drums a lot. He's he played with us when I did the Big Babaloo show in New York. Desi was
did he?
The percussionist. Yeah, he was fantastic. He is a fantastic drummer. A remarkable percussionist. I mean, whenever I can twist his arm, I try to put him in my show because I love to watch him work. And he plays in Linda Pearl's show a lot. Linda Pearl, if you've ever heard her, she has a great, great voice. And they were married. That was Desi's first wife, was Linda Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still very close friends. And whenever she gets an opportunity to do her show and anywhere near where he is, she asks Desi to play percussion because he's just amazing. He's really, really good.
We'd like to see more of him, as a matter of fact, because, you know.
He just doesn't really like to travel. He's
right.
Not a great traveler. He's not fond of airplanes and traveling. And, you know, and he kind of got out of the business because he and his wife, Amy, at the time, ran a ballet company where he lives in Nevada. And that's a full-time job with these kids and everything. And so he's not sure what he wants to do right now.
You know,
just trying to work it out.
What kind of music did you listen to when you were growing up in the 60s? What are your favorite bands?
I listened to everything on the top 40. I knew every song that was the hit song, you know, like I don't today because you somehow get stuck in the top 40 you grew up with. Isn't it funny?
It is.
You do. Those become your songs, and then you get busy having your life and creating careers and having a family, and the top 40 leaves you. It's like you don't have time to listen anymore.
Right.
So, but I was, during the 60s and 70s, I would always listen to whatever the big hit songs were. But then my stepfather, Gary Morton, was a comic, but he loved music, and he opened for lots of great singers like Lena Horne and Sammy Davis Jr. and Frank Sinatra and da-da-da. So he had a fantastic library at home, and he played music all the time. there was always music on in the house, and it was good music, really. His album collection was stellar.
Phenomenal.
So yeah. I heard that as well. And then I heard my father's music whenever he was playing something, and then there was that whole rhythmic, you know, Latin stuff. So I never really got too much into opera, and I wasn't all that fond of hard metal rock, you know? I don't know why. It just, something about that hurt my ears. I was like, no. But I love jazz, and I listened to as much as I could to pretty much everything. It depends on the mood you're in, you know? You want to take a bubble bath, classical music is nice, you know?
Right.
So
I wonder if you're,
depends.
I wonder if your dad knew Celia Cruz. Did you know
yes,
if she
met her several times.
Several times, yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple pictures of them together, actually, at Victor's restaurant in New York City.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, she was the queen. She was awesome.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Oh, deservedly so.
Yeah, I'd be listening to rock and roll in my room growing up, and then my mom out there with Celia Cruz, and then my dad listened to Sinatra. So I was in a mixed, eclectic household, too, of music as well. I saw you on YouTube. I found a clip of your brother, your mom, and your stepdad on Password.
Yeah, oh, God. Oh, jeez. I wish I could burn that clip. Oh, my God.
I think you were 13 or almost 13 at the time.
It's awful. Just that age that you never want anyone to find a picture of yourself or anything. Just that tiny little bow in my hair. Oh, God.
It was classic.
But, you know, we all had a little place in our life where we looked that way, didn't we?
Yeah. Alan Ludden was asking how old you were.
You'd like to forget.
Yeah. He was asking how old you were, and you were going, almost 13, you know, and your mom was laughing. Almost 13, and your mom was laughing because she said, oh, of course she's not going to say 12 and a half.
Right, almost 13.
Yeah.
And now, right, that wouldn't it be funny if we did that now?
I know.
How old are you? Almost 65.
Almost. almost 65. Yeah.
That's funny.
I'm 64
well, my
and
grandmother,
a half.
My mother's mother used to always push it up a year, like if it was her 85th birthday, and you'd say, Dee Dee, how old are you today? And she'd say, working on 86.
Working on 86, right?
She would. It was great.
I drive my daughter crazy because, you know, she's 31. I say, oh, you're pushing 40 now, huh? She goes, Dad,
yeah,
I've got a long way to go yet.
That's right. Suddenly you don't want to be the next year. You want it to be the year before
exactly,
that.
Exactly, exactly. Lucy, yeah. Here's a question I ask everybody that I interview. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie Field of Dreams, to perform with anyone from the past or present, who would that be? And that could be somebody from way back.
Oh, my. Oh, my gosh. To perform with.
Yep, to sing with, perform with, you know, it could be theater, anything.
Oh, so it's not even just a song. You're not talking about singers. You're just talking about anybody?
Anybody. Anybody, you know, that you want to perform with. Who would you pick?
My goodness. How much time have we got? I don't know that I can pull that
I know.
That's a hard question because, because there's theater. And you know, what's coming through my mind right now, and it sounds ridiculous, but I'm going, I've been so fortunate that I've had a chance to be with a lot of those
be
people.
Be with everybody, yeah.
That's the most incredible thing about my life so far is the type of people that I've been fortunate enough to be on a stage with, you know, whether it was a show, a Broadway musical, or a television special, or, you know, a film. Mm-hmm. Some of the greatest that you'd say, oh, I hope I one day get to meet and perform, but between some of the benefits I've done, you know, where it's just a one-night shot, but the Academy Awards show, I opened the Academy Awards show, and there are people that, I mean, there's, I've done it a lot.
You've done it already.
I'm trying to think who.
How about your dad? How about singing with your dad?
With him, so he doesn't count. I have performed with him. Yeah, we've performed together.
Right.
Yeah, and that was fun. That is a really hard question. I don't of anybody anywhere. Oh. And I almost said danced with Fred Astaire, but I did that, so I can't say that.
You did
either.
That too, huh? Even with Fred Astaire. How about Gene Kelly?
I did that. Danced with Fred Astaire once, and so it wasn't. It wasn't on a stage, but it was at somebody's 80th birthday party, and I asked him to dance, and he said, oh, gosh, no, I'm a terrible dancer.
He said that?
I laughed my head off. He actually said that. But he had come up to me first
right. And
tapped me on the shoulder and told me that he loved the Black Dahlia movie that I had done.
Yeah.
I was like, oh,
yeah.
My God, you're the only person I wanted to see here all night long, and you come up to me first and say that? I'll never get over it. Oh, my gosh, I'm so excited. So then later I got real ballsy and went over to his table, and I said, you know, you don't have to say yes, but would you get up and can I have a dance with you? And he literally looked at me and went, oh, Lucy, I'm a terrible dancer.
That's so funny. That's so
I thought,
funny.
What? But he meant, like, at these kinds of things, you know,
right.
Like, I have to rehearse, and then that, da, da, da. But he did. He got up and danced with me anyway. And that was pretty fabulous.
What a memory. How about Gene Kelly? Have you danced with Gene Kelly?
I have not danced with Gene Kelly.
Yeah.
And he's fabulous, too. But I'm trying to think of somebody, like, who would I want to perform with if it was forever? And jeez.
There's so many.
And they could be living or dead or...
Yeah.
I guess I sort of always wanted to be in a film with Paul Newman.
Oh, okay.
That would have been nice.
It's those blue eyes.
But there's a bunch of those people. So I hate that question, Ray. I'm going to think about this now
Sorry.
For the rest of the day. And I'm
you can email me later.
You up and going, no, wait, erase that. How about...
I know.
There are too many.
I know. I get so many interesting answers, too. It's pretty cool.
People actually have answers to that? Like, this
yeah.
is my one answer? This is
pretty much, yeah. But a lot of people get stuck on that. You know, and a lot of people that I've interviewed that have been with a lot of, you know, different legends and have already performed with them say, yeah, I've had such a great life. You know, I can't pick one.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I mean, when I was a kid, I had a huge crush on Wayne Newton, and then I got to perform with him. I got to make a record with him.
Wow!
So a lot of my dreams came true already. So
yeah,
you know, I don't want to be greedy.
Well, if you think of anybody else, just email it to me. How's that?
Okay. All right. I'm sure there's tons of else's, but they cancel each other out. You know, there isn't like one person that if I had done that, then
exactly.
I would really feel like, you know, meh.
Lucy, you have anything else you'd like to promote? We're going to promote the heck out of the album, which I love. 5 stars all the way. Everybody needs to buy it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank
you. I love that people are still paying attention to that album. And if you haven't heard it, it is... one of my proudest achievements. There's a song on there I wrote with my son, Joe Luckinbill, that I think is one of the best songs on the CD.
Right.
Called The Music in Your Heart.
Yep.
And he plays on it. He plays ukulele and guitar, and I wrote the lyrics. He wrote the music. His music's really good, too. You should look a couple of his songs up, Joe Luckinbill. He wrote a song called Home that is just a killer, and another one called Genevieve. I guess he's got a website out there, and they're available. But anyway, he's really... terrific musician. I'll plug him. I don't need any more plugs.
Plug him.
Plug
him. I'm really looking forward to that cruise. I really hope it happens. You said 2017, possibly, to win the Cuba?
Yeah.
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 That's going to be awesome.
How can I let you know about it?
Is it going to be on the web, probably? You advertise on the...
Yes. Yes, okay. Yes.
I'll look it up.
It'll be on my website. Okay.
I definitely want to go to that.
It should be after the first... Yeah, sometime this year, and I'll try to make sure you find out about it.
Fantastic. Lucy, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Ray.
You're so incredibly talented, and we all love Lucy, L-U-C-I-E.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, honey. Take
care. All right, take care. You too.
Bye-bye.
Be sure to catch Lucy Arnaz on tour this summer. Visit Lucy Arnaz's official website at www.lucyarnaz.com for concert dates and information. And be sure to purchase Lucy's most recent release, Latin Roots, at Amazon.com. Lucy also recommends these great sites, American Theater Wing, Lucille Ball Desi Arnaz Center, Lucille Ball Desi Arnaz Museum and Center for Comedy, at www.lucy-desi.com. Lucy also has family websites. Lawrence Luckinbill, his official website is www.laurenluckinbill.com. Joe Luckinbill Music, www.joeluckinbill.com. And you can also reach Kate Luckinbill at LinkedIn and Ben Luckinbill Writing and Design at www.benluckinbill.com. ArlaRadio.com. Very special thanks to Elizabeth Edwards of Arluck Entertainment for arranging this interview, and to Don and Doug Newsome with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Join me bi-weekly, Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, available now at Amazon.com. I promise you, you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio, Station 1.